Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
And a race for the loose puck. Buffalo not sending too many in. Now three. Here's a chance. The front scores! Big hit in the corner. Doan is on the ice picking himself up after Zach Benson finishes the play. But what an effort by Doan to race down the ice and sacrifice himself on that play. And the Sabres are up 3-1 with 14:02 to go in the third.
What a play last night from Josh Doan. Outracing, I'll say it, Boston's best two players, Pasternak and McAvoy, and then ends up feeding Benson, who's all alone in front. There's actually two Sabres that were standing in there all alone in front. Benson's quick shot beats Swayman, put Buffalo up 3-1, and it felt really good at that point for them to get it done. And then, of course, Josh Norris, with Benson working hard in the neutral zone, eventually gets control of the puck, puts it into the empty net. The Sabres go on to win it 4-1. They win the series in six and now are moving on to round two. By the way, speaking of round two, if you are wanting to go, the tickets are now on sale to the public. Go to Sabres.com and get it. Good luck. There are some tickets. We just had someone right here at Batavia Downs just buy some right now on their phone, so it can be done. There are tickets available for the second round. Don't forget the Sabres will host games 1, 2. They'll be on the road for 3 and 4, and then if there is a 5 or a 7, they'll be home for those games. All right, we're here at Batavia Downs inside the Park Place Room. Lots of good stuff happening here all the way up until post time, which is at 6:57. Ryan Hasenauer is going to join us at 3:30 to go through each of the horses in the 19-horse field for the 152nd running for the Roses. But for now, we're going to go back to the Wester Hotline and bring in our Sal Capaccio, of course, our Bills beat reporter. And also, I know Sal's going to tell me a little bit about what he thought of that play from Josh Doan and Zach Benson last night. Sal, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing great, buddy. Good to talk to you. I mean, feels so good for you to be able to be a part of it, the broadcast team and, you know, this team winning and finally getting a playoff win, and Dan Dunleavy and Rob Ray and Marty and everybody. So congratulations. It's got to feel pretty cool to know you're going to be doing this for the second round as well.
Yeah, I mean, for everybody that works at the games, whether you're ushers or Sabre staff or up in the press box, all the media, I mean, if you're the sound guy, the lighting guy, the scoreboard guy, I mean, all these people that work, I mean, the ticket reps, everybody that works in the organization, I mean, Sal, let's face it, it's been a tough go for more than a decade here. And it's just totally flipped, and this town and this area is in love with this team, as they should be. They're super likable, and you watch what happened like last night, and fans are all out at the airport after the game. I mean, Sal, you've experienced that a few times with the Bills, where fans are there. It's cool that it carried over to the Sabres. I mean, there's a whole generation now of people that when the Bills broke the drought and they got in, the people were experiencing Bills playoff games now on a regular basis. They've been in quite a bit. And I guess don't take it for granted, we should say, with the Bills and now with the Sabres, because now there's a whole generation of Sabre fans. I know both of our sons who, because they're our sons, they're sports fans, they're taking in Sabre playoff hockey for the first time, which is super fun for us as a dad, too, to watch them enjoy it.
I'm looking at Rasmus Dahlin's Instagram story now, 1:28 a.m., and all these people lined up, and he wrote, best fans in the world. It's awesome. It really is. I've experienced that. It's super cool, and the feeling that I know the players get to know they're so supported, and the feeling everybody gets, the camaraderie in this community when this happens. You know, Brian, I've always said, we've done this a long time, and together, and we've been in our roles, you know, here at WGR together for almost 2 decades now. I know you were longer than me, but we've had a lot of discussions about these kinds of things, and I will say that we both know that one of the best parts of this happening is the camaraderie that happens in the community, right? And that I always say, we're not New York, we're not LA, we're not Chicago, we're Buffalo. When people talk about us, they talk about chicken wings and Niagara Falls and snow and our sports teams. That's what it is, right? That's what we have, and that's what bands us together. And I think it was so cool to see this last night. To answer your very first question, I think the Josh Doan play to Benson is completely the microcosm of who this team is, right? I mean, to outrace two Bruins to the puck, get his face smashed against the glass and still get that puck to the open man Benson, who knew right where to be, who snapped that in. What a perfect way to just kind of put the bow on this series for that team. It was absolutely awesome.
And when we talk about the likability factor of this team, I mean, there are so many players that people kind of have jumped on as saying, hey, that's my guy, or that's the guy I'm going to buy a jersey of. There's two young players on that play in Josh Doan and in Zach Benson, Sal, that are as popular as anybody with right now. And the fact that they're both so young, and we know now Doan has signed an extension. I would assume Zach Benson at some point is going to get one for himself. It's pretty cool, too. I mean, Doan and Benson are making plays that, you know, a seasoned veteran would be making that had been to the Stanley Cup playoffs for years and years and years. And these two guys are out there enjoying it for the first time and having a huge impact on the Sabres' success.
Yeah, you know, I do believe that, you know, playoff experience matters. And when you play certain teams, have been down certain roads, it's going to matter. But it doesn't have to be the end-all be-all, right? You get experience through playing and through those certain games and battles. And they played enough of them, you know, as the season went on. And then when the series started, and look, I think that Game 5 was a great lesson for this team. To me, the Bruins dragged the Sabres into the game they wanted to play in Game 5, right? I mean, what did even Lindy say? The clutching and the grabbing and the hooking and, you know, all that. And, like, we wanted to get away from that. I thought it was so on point, and I thought about that going into Game 6, and I'm so glad Lindy said that in postgame, which was, we basically told our guys, just keep moving your feet. You know what he's saying? He goes, don't play their game. Play our game, right? Move your feet. Don't let them do that to you. Don't let them drag you into their kind of game. And that's exactly what they did. And I think, to your point of, you know, the experience, that's what you learn. Hey, we don't have to play their game here. But the Bruins, they have, you know, playoff experience. Not an incredible amount compared to maybe what Tampa is with some of the guys on their team. But the Bruins knew that that's how they wanted to play. And they kind of got the Sabres to do it. Sabres said, we're not going to let that happen. They learned their lesson in Game 5. It does not have to be the end-all be-all to have that experience. I think the farther you go on, of course, understanding how much of a grind a 7-game series, 3 different rounds, 4 rounds in the cup, you know, can be, it can matter for sure. But I love the moxie of this team, the makeup of this team, and give the coaching staff a lot of credit too. I thought last night they pushed the right buttons to put the right people in the lineup and to have the right message.
Absolutely. Sal Capaccio with us here on the Western Hotline. Brian Colzio live at Batavia Downs. 2-5 here today. You can come on out. As Ryan Hasenauer mentioned earlier, they've got 3 different parties going on here. We're in the Park Place room, ton of TVs, watching sports all day. And, of course, a great spot for you to take in the Derby. Ryan's going to come back on at 3:30 to go through all the horses. If you're interested in maybe making a wager today, you're going to want to tune in next segment for that. Sal, before we get to the Bills, just one or two more things on the Sabres. When the Bills first made the playoffs, obviously the expectations were maybe different than what the Sabres are now. Even though they were both long, long droughts, the Bills 17 seasons, the Sabres 14 seasons, they had Tyrod Taylor and, you know, the offense we know maybe had limited capacities. I don't think there was the thought of, hey, this team can win the Super Bowl. They were just so excited that the drought was over. I feel like with the Sabres, because they end up winning the division, I mean, they were competing right to the end with Carolina for the number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference. The thought of, hey, not only did they break the drought, they didn't do it in a, oh, we slipped in as wild card 2 fashion. They won the division and are now, you know, if you look at the odds here, they're in the top 3-4 teams in terms of winning the Stanley Cup. So it's almost a little bit different. Not only did they break the drought, the expectations of maybe what they could do in this actual playoff run is as high as anybody.
No doubt. I mean, when the Bills broke their drought in 17, you know, I thought they had a chance to beat Jacksonville. They had to really play a certain kind of game, and they did play that game, but they didn't have enough on offense. But
was that almost a 10-3 like, final, right? Was that 10-3?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. Right? And it was almost like, you know, look, they have a chance they can go there. They have to play a perfect game. Really good game plan they had defensively. They couldn't score, but it was like they're not going to like really have a chance to get to the Super Bowl. This is very nice. It's awesome. This is a great ride. When this happened with the Sabres, once we got to a point of they're going to get home ice, even before the division actually, you know, winning the division, Brian, when they got to like they're going to have home ice, I'm like, the expectation has to change here. Like, you can't get home ice and then not expect to at least get it passed around, right? Like, that's what you're here for now. Once they won the division and then you saw third, fourth in the league, second in the conference, 100%. We can talk about playoff experience like we did before and all the other things that matter this time of year. But the fact is, this team is, they have just as good a shot because of the team they are as any team in the East. And yes, I know Carolina's hanging out there. They played really well in Carolina when they lost the last time they played there, even though it's a been a house of horrors for them, essentially, and haven't been able to beat them a lot. And really, when's the last time they won in Carolina? Many years, right? It's been quite a while. But they played with them, and they can play with them. And I know they're not next on the schedule. I get it. But my point is, there is no one in the East that this team can't beat, can't play with, and can't advance against.
That Bills game, by the way, was 10-3. Blake Bortles and Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod had 137 yards passing, one interception. I forgot Nathan Peterman threw three passes in that game. Was that at
Tyrod
the end of the game?
Tyrod banged his head down when
good
he went
that.
Out of the game late. And Peterman threw at the ball. I think Jalen Ramsey picked it off at the end of the game. Had the
yeah, they each had interception.
Hey, by the way, did you see while we were talking, NHL player safety has informed Charlie McAvoy he has been offered an in-person hearing for the slash against Zach Benson.
So that could that's a minimum of 5 games, I think, right? Is that usually I think that's how that works.
Yeah, and so obviously that wouldn't be till next year for him.
Oh, that okay, that means he can be suspended more than 5. That's right.
Oh, okay. He's been offered an in-person. So if you don't take the in-person, like do you say I don't want to go? I don't know how that works.
I wonder if it's kind of like your opportunity to maybe appeal or But because it's in person, it can be more than 5. Wow.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Good update on that. Yep. Charlie McAvoy. He took the swing there at Benson. And, man, Benson drew all the penalties last night. I know teams and other fans probably hate him. But, I mean, man, this guy, for whatever reason, he just gets it under the skin of these other teams so much. And a lot of it, Sal, I think is just because he's in the right spot at the right time, working hard, anticipating the play. And if you're on the other team, you're like, you're annoyed because he's always beating you there. He's always around. And I can see why other guys get frustrated. Now, there's no excuse for what McAvoy did, but I can see why guys take undisciplined penalties against Benson because he is a pest to play against.
No doubt. I mean, like, every team wants guys like that. Every, you know, we can name them, name guys after guys after guys in the many years that have been, you know, little guys get under your skin and rats and all that, whatever you want to call them. And, no doubt. And I think what really hurts is when you have a guy that can do that, but then still score a goal, right? That's what he is. He not only can do that to you, but he scores goals. He makes plays. Like he's a good offensive player. So it's not like when he's on the ice, you just have to kind of concentrate on him and doing those things to you. You actually have to defend him. And when he's alone in front of the net, I mean, that replay we were watching last night and Max plays hockey. And I'm like, Max, look at the whip on his stick right there. The flex, right? Like he was ready, set up. What a great play by Doan, like we were talking about. And man, what a great shot that was. So I love it, man. I just love the way this team is playing right now. I love this team. I love the makeup of them. And it's the cool part is too, Brian, and nothing's ever guaranteed. I get that. Like, I totally understand that. But how can you not feel this is just the beginning of something really great for a while with this group, right? Like, they're going to be here for a while. We're going to be talking. We're going to be doing this, what we're doing, on Derby Saturday probably for the next several years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we are now into round 2, and we still don't know the opponent. But, yeah, I think it's built for that. I mean, if you look at all the star players, other than Alex Tuch, they're all signed long-term. Even Doan now, Samuelson is, Dahlin is, Thompson is. I think probably the Alex Tuch storyline, as soon as the season ends, we hope obviously it's not for a while, will become the immediate story of, and we've seen how important he is. He had 7 points in 6 games in this series. I think the symbolism of losing Alex Tuch, Sal, is even greater than maybe what his pure performances as a player because of his backstory, the fact that he grew up, we know, in Syracuse. He grew up a Sabres fan. His dream was to play for this team. He came here essentially from winning a Stanley Cup in Vegas to being in the bottom-dwelling Sabres and their drought. Yet, to me, I felt like he took the high road in so many ways, kept wanting to be a leader. He now wears a letter. Like, I feel like it's more even than just the offensive number production. I think he's so good shorthanded. He's good, power all in all instances, 5-on-5, 4-on-5, 5-on-4, all these sort of things. Like, a symbol of losing Tuck to me would be a huge blow for this franchise. I feel like with the salary cap going up, if you have to overpay him, or maybe, you know, people think, oh, they're going to give him a discount. He's going to give him a discount. I don't know. It has to be done, in my opinion, for what he means to this team, both on and off the ice.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say it the way you did, because I was thinking about this a few times when this run was happening, which is I look at both Tuck and Zucker in the same regard of in this way, which is, yeah, they were nice players on the Sabres and you liked them, but was it always just kind of like, well, their team isn't that good, so I inflate them. Like, I thought, I don't think I had an appreciation for how good either of those players truly were until this year, if that makes sense. Because now they're actually making a difference on a good team in every situation, right? And you're like, wait a minute, like, these are good players on any team. It's not just good players on this team that isn't that good, right? You know? And you see the difference, and you're right about that. I mean, for what these guys both mean, and Alex Tuck, and what he means to the organization, and the situational hockey that he can play, and the way that Lindy can deploy him. I mean, look, I don't want to get ahead of myself. That's something on July 1st, by July 1st, and hopefully they'll work out. And look, if you win a Stanley Cup, all the power to him. Maybe he wants to go. So I'm okay, right? Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you. If you don't, like, I think it becomes a little bit more urgent or pressing. You'd love to have that guy on your team going forward. But I think, though, the way that, you know, this team is structured and what they need, I would not care too much about the eighth year, even given the age, right? Like, I need this guy with this group for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Right. You'll worry about that later. Who knows what the cap's going to do? It seems like the NHL cap each year is going up more than anticipated. So I agree with you. I think even if you have to overpay him, you get it done. I think symbolically it means so much to keep him. All right, Sal Capaccio with us here on the Western Hotline. Okay, wanted to get a little Bills in there with you too, Sal. You look back now, we know a week ago at this time they were heavy into day 3 of the draft, but now that it's been a week from now, or a week away, what do you reflect on as maybe kind of the story of the 2026 Bills draft?
So when they first completed the draft, I wrote an article at WGR550.com calling it the upside down draft. And what I meant by that was, normally you look from round 1 to round 7, you put it on a piece of paper, and at the top, round 1, round 2 are your impact players. Guys are going to walk on your field, immediately help you. As you go through 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it's more of, yeah, depth players, find some roles for them, and, you know, yeah, they're going to play, but we'll see. It almost feels like they did the opposite this year, which is, and I'm not counting necessarily the 7th round, although the punter's going to, you know, be an impact player, I think, for his position. It's like, to me, they got almost depth players who are going to contribute, but don't have starting roles right away, right in the beginning. TJ Parker. TJ Parker's an edge player, but he's got Bradley Chubb and Greg Rousseau in front of him. Like, he's not going to be a starter. He's going to play, but he's not going to be a starter. And then you have IGB, Davison Igbinosin. And yeah, he's the 3rd corner, right? I mean, could he eventually beat out Max Harrison? Sure, there's a world that could happen. But you have Max Harrison and Christian Benford ahead of him. He's a 3rd corner. Okay, good players that are going to help you out. And then what happened, though, after that? I mean, Skylar Bell's going to walk on that field and probably make an impact right away. He's going to play. I think Jalen Kilgore is going to play right away. He could be the 3rd safety, a big nickel in all different situations. Like, these are guys that are going to play. I think Jude Bowery could be a guy that could be your automatic swing tackle that could wind up playing. Maybe he could actually win a starting job at guard if things go a certain way. So that's number 1 that I saw. Number 2, I think, Brian, the big mistake that a lot of us made, including me, is, and I'll raise my hand on this and say, you know, I thought Caden McDonald, like, that was the guy I thought the Bills would take. I had him mocked. They get to the 2nd day. Caden McDonald, defensive tackle, nose guard, Ohio State, just fits. And the reason why is because you look at that run defense. It wasn't good last year. You listen to Jim Leonard, Brandon Bean, we got to stop the run. What do we all think about middle of the field, stopping the run, big defensive tackle, and a 3-4? It all fits together. I think the thing we did not think about enough that I now am realizing, their idea of stopping the run is coming from how they got beat on the edges more last year. They got beat around the edge a lot. Joey Bosa was terrible as a run defender last year. It wasn't about the middle of the field to them. It's about funneling to the middle of the field because they couldn't stop the edges. TJ Parker is a pass rusher. He's an edge rusher. He's a really good run defender, actually. Bradley Chubb is a really good run defender. Greg Rousseau is a really good run defender. I think the theme of this defensive draft in this defensive offseason was to get better on the edges against the run, not necessarily in the middle. That will take care of itself more so.
Skylar Bell, wide receiver, of course, to me, intriguing because we love to talk about wide receivers. But what do you think of him and, I guess, fitting in the wide receiver room for the Bills? Is this a player that could be on the field and playing on a regular basis, or is that too much of a stretch for year one for him?
I think he plays right away. I just really think a lot of it comes down to, once again, Keon Coleman and where he is, what he does, how, you know, he is he on time for everything and does everything he's supposed to do? And can he become your true, like, number three, number two in wide receiver based on where you drafted him, what you expected? If not, then the door is open there. But I still think either way, Skylar Bell is going to find his way on the field. If you lined up the ball right now and the Bills were playing a game and they went 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, are we absolutely sure who the third guy is? It's DJ Moore, Khalil Shakir, and then who? It's probably Josh Palmer. It could be Keon Coleman. It could be Skylar Bell.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, I do think he has a chance. The other reason why, Brian, is people have to remember, he played 5 years of college football. He's already 24 years old. He's older than Keon Coleman by almost a year. Like, he's got a lot of experience. He's not walking in like a normal rookie here. This is like Ray Davis last year. When Ray Davis came to the Bills last year, he was an older rookie, or 2 years ago. And he, you know, right away, I mean, he knew how to fit into an NFL organization and play. I think you have to account for that for Skylar Bell here. Like, this is not a 22-year-old rookie. I think he's 24 already. You know, he has 5 years of experience, like I said, in college. And I think he's ready to walk onto an NFL field and play.
Interesting. All right, how about the schedule? When are we getting that? I know I listened to you and Matt Bove on your podcast, Game Day, Every Day's Game Day in Buffalo, right? I said it,
always.
Right? Yeah. Always game, yeah, always. Sorry. With
right.
Mike North. And that was, I feel like your podcast, I don't know if that was the longest you ever went with Mike, but I feel like every year that I listen to it, you go longer. I'm like, I could have listened to him for another half hour. Keep
it's
going.
Amazing, he's right?
It's
you.
So interesting. I love the logistics of how they all make all the decisions with the schedule and everything. I find it fascinating. I feel like I missed my calling. I'm like, all right, I wanted to be in NCAA. I want to be in the room for NCAA bracketology. Like, I'm like, that could have been me. Just, I'm like, I also think I could be in the schedule, you know, team, on his team to do the schedule. I'm like, I want to have that job too.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of things
well,
I want to do.
The NCAA might be able to use you now. Now they're going to 76
going to
teams. Maybe they'll use
oh,
you.
Oh, my goodness. I know. The more is better mentality with everything here. I don't know if it's going to be better. I don't know. We'll find out. All right. So the schedule what?
So, yeah, we don't know the exact date, Brian. We're sitting here on May 2nd. So usually it's the second week of May. So not next week, but the week after, which would be the 10th. So the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, somewhere in there. And we'll get some leaks beforehand. They'll start to put out some games. You know, they'll do the whole morning show circuit. There's going to be somebody on, like, Good Morning America, ABC, right, highlighting a game. Oh, yeah, ABC, ESPN's got this. There's going to be somebody on, what's NBC? The Today Show, right? Something like that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, Sunday Night Football. And they'll do all of that. An Amazon Prime game, that'll come out. We don't know. The only thing that Mike North did say, and he did leave the door open for it being like the week after that, the third week of May. I'm like, oh, come on, really?
Oh.
Are we going to wait that long for the NFL schedule? Like, he left the door open for it. I still don't think it's going to happen, but it is possible. But what's interesting is, so I'm leaving next Saturday for this Buffalo Football Legends cruise that I'm a part of. So I'm not going to be actually in town for Sabres playoffs after, like, probably game maybe two or three in the next series. Who knows what's going to happen, but I'm going to be on this boat with Thurman Thomas, Steve Tasker, Fred Jackson, Doug Flutie, and a whole bunch of Bills fans. And the schedule is going to come out while we're on this ship. And we're going to do a podcast about it. Like, we're going to talk about the schedule with these guys, and it's going to be really fun and really cool. So I'm looking
That's
forward
right.
to that.
Awesome. It's always game day in Buffalo. Yes, I want to make sure I said it right. So we'll
yes.
look for that. That'll be awesome. And, well, enjoy the cruise. But obviously, you're still here for a little bit before that starts. That's awesome. Have you
Hey, listen,
ever been...
we have already checked in on if the games will be on while we're on the cruise. Yes. I mean, I
okay.
will tell you, like, they are doing whatever they can to make sure that all of us on that cruise can watch Sabres playoff games.
That's good. So I was on a cruise 2 years ago during the World Cup, and
Ooh.
That was really, I'm sorry, three, what would that have been? 3 years ago? Yeah, because it's upcoming this summer. So 3 years ago, 2022. and England was playing, and it was a ship. Yeah, 4 years ago. Yeah, sorry, it was a ship out of Southampton, and a ton of English, obviously, on the cruise, and it was wild. They had it on big screens all over. And it was really, really cool to take that in. So a sporting event on a cruise, like, look, we see all these watch parties. I'm excited to hear from you how that goes. I think that'll be really, really cool.
And I'll tell you this. We were on a cruise last year during the Four Nations face-off. And it was, we go to like, well, we got to watch this hockey game. So we go in this like theater area and they put it on the big screen. It was a bar restaurant, like, you know, how you have like the big screen there for like a theater seating. And they did it. And I didn't realize, like, we're on this cruise, and all of a sudden, everybody sitting there were Canadian fans. Like, they're all from Canada. I'm like, Oh, my God, we were some of the – there were some Americans there, but we were, like, some of the only ones. And it was wild. And it was that game where right away there was the fighting. I mean, was it the – was that the gold medal game? No, it was the regular season game. The round robin game, right? But anyway, it was kind of really interesting watching it with all of them.
Really cool. Well, you'll have a good time on that cruise for sure. All right. Well, when you get the latest on the schedule, obviously I'll be following you for that. So hope we'll get something soon here over the next 2 weeks.
I got a question for you real quick. I know you got to go. Number one, do you have a preference, Montreal or Tampa?
I think for personal entertainment, it's Montreal. I think the scene in both buildings would be tremendous. I think Montreal plays more of a similar style as the Sabres, with their speed and their offense and their skill. So I think if I just want to be entertained by great hockey, I think that's the call. I've been, over the last like 24 hours, I've been switching more so to, I think maybe the Sabres have a better chance to beat Tampa. The scary part of them is Vasilevskiy, but they've done well against him this year.
They just beat Swayman.
And they just beat Swayman, who I think who's playing better than Vasilevskiy. So yeah. I know that there could be a lot of other antics that go on, and Tampa can be a dirty team and all that sort of stuff, but the Sabres have been able to stay focused even during that, even when Boston brought a little bit of that. So I feel like I'm turning more towards Tampa, but I don't know. They both have an elite player.
That Canadiens top line might be the best top line in hockey, right? I mean, that's going to be tough to defend if you play them. But you're right. I agree with everything you said there, and maybe it's Tampa. It's just Tampa scares the living heck out of me because of their experience and being where they've been before and all that kind of stuff. And then the second question is, I have 100 people texting me about when game one is. We do not know anything yet. Are you going to guess Tuesday or Wednesday?
No. The only reason I'm guessing Tuesday over Wednesday is because the Carolina-Philadelphia series is already starting tonight. And I'm thinking, do they want it to get too far along? I mean, that's my only reason. I'll throw a fly
in the ointment here on one reason, though, one thing. I agree with you. I think Tuesday, unless if it's Montreal, don't they want a game on Saturday for Hockey Night in Canada because the only Canadian team remaining? And then if you're gonna go to game two on Saturday, it probably makes sense that you're not gonna go Tuesday Saturday. You'd go Wednesday Saturday.
Right. But think about that. Then that means game two of this series is a week from tonight, and this Carolina-Philadelphia series is already starting tonight. So
you could go Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
I was thinking Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday
there
to set
go,
that
yeah.
up. Yeah, especially because the travel between Buffalo and Montreal is easy, short.
Yep.
Like it's not a taxi. Yeah. They're not going coast to coast or anything for this. So if the buildings are available, I mean, I'm sure Sportsnet and Canada and Hockey Night in Canada, whatever power they have, they would love to have Montreal at home next Saturday night if they could pull that off. So that's why I'm maybe Tuesday. But you're right. What if this game tomorrow night goes two or three overtimes? Are they going to make them turn around and play it? I wonder if that's the delay, why they won't announce it. You're right. That's what we want for sure. Absolutely. All right, Sal, I got to go. I love talking with you as always. Appreciate it. Thanks again for coming on.
All right, buddy. You too. Thanks.
All right, Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Timeout. When we come back, Ryan Hasenauer. He'll go through horse by horse of the Kentucky Derby here as we roll on from Batavia Downs inside the Park Place Room. I'm Brian Colzio. We'll step aside here and be back with Ryan's thoughts here on the 12th race today from Churchill Downs right after this on WGR.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
.337 is the time. We welcome you back here to Batavia Downs inside the Park Place Room. The party is rocking. Our Triple Crown show going till 5 p.m. Happy to be with you here on WGR. Ryan Hasenauer from Batavia Downs has rejoined us.
Yes, hello.
Ryan, you ready to go here?
I have been here enjoying Brian's fantastic radio show. The hardest working man in radio, working so late last night that up early this morning, driving out to Springville. Nobody does it like Brian Koziel.
Thank you.
Let me tell you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on Tea to Green this morning.
Oh, my pleasure. I love doing that.
Yes. All right. Well, we teased on Tea to Green today that Ryan was going to give the horse-by-horse breakdown. So here we go. Ready to make your notes. If you're ready to figure out who am I going to bet today
on
the Kentucky Derby, Ryan's going to give you a little... some juicy nuggets on each of these guys here. So let's start with the one horse, Renegade, the morning line favorite, on the rail, in stall one.
And, of course, we did go over the importance of being on the rail, and everything kind of goes on with that. But, again, you can get stuck on the rail if you don't break well. But this horse is a closer, stalker. He won the Arkansas Derby. He has no wins as a two-year-old. He did finish first, but then he got DQ'd. So he got DQ'd to second. So he kind of had a win, and then he didn't have a win there. Intermischief and Curlin are in his pedigree, so those are very good things. But the number one post, Brian hasn't won since 1986.
Oof.
It's 5 years old. Don't remember it. So we'll have to see if Renegade can break well and just get in that pocket and then make a run and do it. But yeah. Renegade's the morning line favorite for a reason. He's a very great horse.
Yeah, try to break that 40-year drought of winning from stall one. Okay, the two horse is Albus.
Albus was named after Albus Dumbledore from Harry Potter fame.
Yeah,
okay,
very nice.
Jackie Manifranco, he's a 30-1 long shot there. He's a stalker horse. Now, he upset the field in the Wood Memorial. He's got no wins as a two-year-old, but he's won both his starts as a three-year-old. This is the first Derby entry for Riley Mott, who is the son of legendary trainer Bill Mott, who also has horses in this race. He's got a slower finishing time than others, though, hence the 30-1 odds. So we'll just see if he kind of makes some noise. But again, he shocked everybody in that Wood Memorial, but those speed figures do not hold up in a race like this when it's the best against the best.
Horse three and Intrepido.
Intrepido.
One of the long shots, right?
Exactly. 50-1 with Hector Berrios on the back. This is a stalker horse. Yet another long shot. He only was in because another horse blacked out. So just so people understand how this works, very similar to the NCAA basketball tournaments. You win your conference tournament, you're in. But if you're an at-large, you can also get in because you've got a body of work, so to speak. The same thing with these Derby races. As you race as a three-year-old after the first of the year, up until the time that, you know, the nominations are closed, so to speak, when you win certain races, you get Derby points. Whoever's got the most Derby points, of course, is qualifying for these races.
Right.
So if a horse is very good and he's got enough Derby points to qualify, he's in the top 20 of Derby points, but he says, you know what, I'm actually a horse that's a sprinter. I'm going to go point at the Preakness, or I'm just not going to do this. I want to race in something else. Not why you would. You want to race in the Derby. They're out, and then another horse that's farther down the list gets in. This is exactly what happened with Intrepido and several other horses here, where other horses decided to get pointed towards other races, and so they got in. Well, if you weren't good enough to get in, it's really tough for me to figure out if I want to bet on you. So
that's right. All right, the four horse is Litmus Test with a trainer. I think we've heard of that name before.
Yes, Bobby B is here. Bob Afford is back. He was back last year. He's back again with two entries this year. Martin Garcia is the jockey. This is a press-the-pace horse, so he's going to actually try to get from that four and go right out to the front. He's a long-shot horse, again, only in because other horses backed out. Back in November, he was fourth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, which is the race for all those two-year-olds, the winner of which is usually anointed as the Derby favorite. He won the Los Altamos Stakes as well. He is the son of 2016 Derby winner Nyquist, and he'll be put blinkers back on to focus up after taking them off in a disastrous Arkansas Derby where he finished seventh out of eight horses. Boo.
All right, Litmus Test 30-1. Also 30-1 is the five horse, Right to Party.
Now, Right to Party unfortunately did scratch, so he's all done. He will not be here today.
Oh, that's
but,
right.
But that's all good. Number six is Commandment with a 6-1, maybe your second or third choice favorite with Luis Saez on the back. Hall of Fame trainer Brad Cox is going to be the trainer there. Stalker horse, one of the favorites, four wins from five starts, including his maiden right there at Churchill Downs in November. Now, he rallied from fourth at the top of the stretch to win the Florida Derby. So, again, there's like four or five of these major races. There's the Bluegrass Stakes. There's the Arkansas Derby. There's the Wood Memorial, which is New York's win and you're in contest. And, of course, the Florida Derby is the one in Florida, and he won that. So he came from fourth back at the top of the stretch to win that. He also won the Fountain of Youth prep race. Now, interestingly about Commandment, though, there's a new jockey on board there. He's got Luis Saez. Flavian Pratt was on his back before, and Errat Ortiz Jr. was on his back previous to that. Errat, of course, is riding the number one Renegade. So a little bit of a jockey change here, so we'll see what that means.
Seven horse, Dannon Bourbon at 20-1.
Dannon Bourbon is the wise guy horse, the horse that everybody who's a clocker, the people with those, they got the stopwatches and they're on the rail at 6 a.m. with their car, their Starbucks, waiting for these horses to run by at Churchill. He's been clocking very well, and this is one of the Japanese horses. Now, this horse is undefeated in three starts, okay? And he's the buzz horse, but he's going to have to face much more formidable competition here today, but he does have a good pedigree at distance. So keep an eye on number seven, Dannon Bourbon. I know a few people have used him in their bets, including our own Nick the Railbird.
All right. Eight horse, So Happy at 15-1.
So Happy's got Hall of Famer Mike Smith, two-time Derby winner, on his back. He's a press-the-pace horse, so Mike's going to probably take him to the front. Three wins and four lifetime starts, including a win in California's winning during race, the Santa Anita Derby. Now, this particular horse here, number eight, So Happy, he's going to be looking to, go up against some horses that he's seen before. Potente, he lost to him in the San Felipe warm-up race, but then got his revenge winning the Santa Anita Derby. And with that sprinter pedigree, he's going to need to stay to the front in order to have a chance. So look for the number eight to go right out to the front when the gates open.
All right, the nine horse, the Puma Scratch. We go to number 10, and it's Wonder Dean.
Wonder Dean, the other Japanese horse in this race. This Japanese horse won the UAE Derby, which is Dubai's winning your in race. He rallied in the stretch to win by 2 1/3 lengths. His jockey rode a Japanese horse to third in 2024, which at the time, and it still is the best finish by a Japanese horse in the Kentucky Derby. For a long time, Brian, we've always heard about these Japanese horses coming in, and they kind of, unfortunately, have fallen flat, but we did have a horse come second there in 2024. Let's see if this is the year that a Japanese horse finally does it and wins the Kentucky Derby.
The 11 horse, Incredibles, 20-1.
So this is another Riley Mott horse and a stalker horse. This horse won the Virginia Derby after a poor showing in the Holy Bull graded two stakes race. He's got two wins and two starts here at Churchill Downs in a stakes race and at a grade three race. Distance is not in his pedigree, and this is his jockey's Derby debut, Jamie Torres. So we'll see what happens with Incredible. I've seen a few people use this particular horse in their bets as well.
All right, we go now to the 12. Chief Wallaby, one of the favorites, 8-1.
Yeah, Chief Wallaby, I didn't like the way that I was reading about this horse. So if you look at this horse, he came in third in the Florida Derby. Not exactly great. He came in second in the Fountain of Youth, and you're thinking, this horse is going backwards. Same thing with his speed score. He had a 99 in the Fountain of Youth, and then followed up with a 96 in the Florida Derby. But a lot of people I've been seeing on Twitter have really liked this horse. He's adding the blinkers back, and of course his trainer Bill Mott, here's Bill Mott's horse, he won the Derby last year. So that's why a lot of people are liking this combination of Junior Alvarado and Bill Mott together again on Chief Wallaby.
13 is a scratch. That's Silent Tactics. So we go to 14, Potente.
Potente with jockey Juan Hernandez. And, of course, Bobby B is back. This is Bob Baffert's horse. This is another press-the-pace horse. Going to go right to the front. Second in the Santa Anita Derby after winning the San Felipe. Again, he was up there and then the revenge tour came back for So Happy to beat him. Now, for Potente, he's got a promising pedigree for distance, and he could press the pace. But in the San Felipe, he actually won by settling in, not near the front, but not on the lead. So, and again, his jockey is making his Derby debut.
All right, from Potente, we go to the 15-horse Emerging Market at 15-1.
15-1. Flavian Pratt on the back, great jock there, and Chad Brown is the trainer. This is a stalker horse. He won the Louisiana Derby, which is Louisiana's winning your in Derby prep race. Only two lifetime starts to his name, but both of them were winners. Good pedigree for the distance, and again, like I said, a somewhat unknown, having that he's only raced in two races. The last horse to win the Derby after just two career starts was Leonidas in 83. Not 1983, Brian, 1883. Whew. So it's also important to note that Flavian Pratt is riding this horse. He is not on the six-horse Commandment, who he raced to victory in the Florida Derby. So maybe a little bit of an interesting little wrinkle there with a horse, with a jockey deciding to race one horse over another.
16 Horace Pavlovian at 30-1.
So this is Edwin Maldonado on the back with Doug O'Neill of 2012. I'll Have Another Fame. He is the pace setter, set the pace, and first of two gray horses in the field today. This horse has 10 career starts. So he's like, he's been around the block. This horse has been around. He's seen a lot. Some of these horses only have two starts. This horse has got 10 career starts. And he's got two wins, including the Sunland Derby and a second place in that Santa Anita Derby. However, for Pavlovian, his speed numbers are a bit low, and his derby is, or his jockey is making his derby debut. I know that Nick the Railbird really likes Pavlovian. Like you said, he can go to the front early and avoid those traffic issues, and he might hang on for second or third. So if you're going to lose Pavlovian, maybe don't use him on top in these exotic bets. Maybe just use him in second or third.
Okay, we just got a minute or so left here. Let's get quickly through the rest. 17, one of the long shots, 6 speed at 50-1.
Sure, the pace setter horse, second in the UAE Derby. He's got a good pedigree for the longer races, but he did fade late, and this is a longer race.
18 horse is Further Ado, and this is a 6-1 horse.
This is the horse that I love, guys. John Velasquez on the back now. Further Ado for a very, very long time. In fact, all of his career starts except for one. He had a Red Ortiz Jr. And Red Ortiz decided to ride the number one Renegade, but he picks up John Velasquez, 3-time Derby winner. I love it. I love Further Ado. He's my horse.
19 is Golden Tempo, 30-1.
So Jose Ortiz is the jockey. He's a closer horse. He's got four career starts at an excellent pedigree distance, but his speed figures are going to make him really, really a long shot.
And the 20 horse Fullafort is a scratch. So three others get in, 21 Great White, 22 Ocelli, and 23 Robusta.
Yeah, Great White is a gray horse, and he did come in fifth in the Bluegrass Stakes, but the same thing can be said for all these horses. Ocelli was third in the Wood Memorial, and Robusta was dead last, seventh in the Santa Anita Derby. All these horses weren't in. They only got in because of the scratches, so they're having a tough time here with making me think I'm going to make any money betting on them.
Excellent breakdown, Ryan. We'll get your picks next hour.
That sounds good. We'll see you then.
All right, awesome. Ryan has an hour there. The horse-by-horse breakdown. The Kentucky Derby coming up later today. Posted 6:57. We'll take a timeout here on WGR, live from Batavia Downs.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
WGR, Brian Colziel live at Batavia Downs, our Triple Crown Series show. Kentucky Derby post is at 6:57. Big thanks to Ryan Hasenauer for joining us last hour with his horse-by-horse breakdown. He's going to give us our picks coming up in hour number three. Speaking of hour number three, we got Paul Hamilton coming up. We'll get his thoughts on the Sabres. He was at TD Garden last night. That will lead off next hour as we roll on here on our Kentucky Derby show on WGR.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.